Two peas in a bong. Two peas in a bong. Two peas in a bong.
Two peas in a bong.
Two peas and a bong.
All right, y'all, two peas in a bong, back at it. We are in the building again. It's your boy DP.
It's your boy KP.
And back like I never left bong. What's happening?
All right, man. A lot has transpired over the course of our time away. You know, we've been away for a couple weeks now. The main thing, well, not the main thing, but one of the, I guess you would say, the most significant things is the verdict in the George Floyd case, Derek Chauvin murdering George Floyd. As you all know, he was convicted. He being Derek Chauvin was convicted of second degree murder, unintentional murder, third degree murder, and second degree manslaughter. The jurors deliberated over the course of 2 days for, I think it was about 10 hours before coming to a guilty verdict. Mm-hmm. Now, Chauvin can face up to 40 years in prison. His sentencing is not going to be until 8 weeks from now.
Yeah, June.
So it's going to take a little bit to get to the point to where he's being sentenced. But he can face up to 40 years. But if you go by the recommended sentencing, it's 12 and a half. So it's definitely way lower than that 40 years. So just because he can face up to that amount doesn't necessarily mean that's what he's going to get. So, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out at that point. And then, you know, will folks be frustrated if he doesn't get more than 12 and a half?
So with good behavior and solitary confinement, he'll be out in 7.
Yeah, because, it's not a Fed case. So, yeah. Man, how do y'all feel about the outcome? How do y'all feel about the verdict?
I don't know how to feel because I don't know the sentencing time. So it's, you know, on one hand, you're happy that he was found guilty and you're like, it was about damn time, but you're still waiting to see what the final outcome is going to be. And so it's like, I don't know. Me, I'm kind of in limbo with my feelings. You know, you don't want to get too happy. But on the second part of it, you're like, also, they've done something that it just seems like they haven't done before. And that's find a cop guilty for murder. We look and police always talk about training when it comes to dealing with citizens. But why is it that black cops never make these same mistakes when it comes to killing white citizens in America? So I'm really hoping when Chauvin is sentenced that they set the bar to where he's sentenced for a long damn time and that these killings stop. You know, throughout all of this, there was a bill passed. What is the bill to benefit Asians? What is it called? The actual name?
And the Anti-Asian Hate Crime Bill.
Yes. There was an anti-Asian hate crime bill that was passed in the midst of all of this that, you know, is going to benefit Asians when they feel that they're targeted by other races of people. Yet you have blacks that are consistently targeted and there hasn't been a bill passed to protect black folks from being murdered. So again, yeah, I'm sitting back and on one hand, I'm happy that he was found guilty of murder. But on the other hand, I'm waiting to hear what the final outcome is and what the sentence is going to be in June. So that's where I stand.
So I don't really get into the politics because you don't want to really make anybody feel like they're being singled out or they're being targeted. But, you know, when you look back, when you look back on it and you think about that anti-Asian hate bill that got passed by both Democrats and Republicans, they came together for that. It's like, damn, you know, have y'all ever come together like that for Black people when they needed it? And again, I have nothing against Asians. I have nothing against anyone. But wow, that anti-hate bill was spurred by COVID-19 and the fact that I think Asians were receiving a lot of hate directed towards them because of what was, you know, what Donald Trump and a lot of, you know, I would say maybe white supremacists or whatever considered COVID-19 to have started in Asia, and they brought it out here and this, that, and the third. And to see government move swiftly to come and save the day, it's a beautiful thing to know that that's something that they can do. But then it begs the question, Black people been out here since the beginning of the country, right? Since, you know, when they say Black people built this joint for free, like, niggas been around forever. And we don't have anything like that to where, you know, I think they're trying to pass some anti-lynching bills that's still getting hung up. No pun intended, still getting hung up, you know, in when they bring the votes on the floor, where you have people that don't really agree with it. They don't think lynching is a real issue, or, you know, that it's a thing of the past, that type of situation. It's like, damn. You know, but anyways, I'm not even here to discuss that. In regards to the, I just wanted to touch on that for 1 second because Kev brought it up. But in regards to the Derek Chauvin case, like, it's, you know, it's good to see, you know, justice upheld when it was so obvious. But the reason we're at a place like this where motherfuckers is happy to see somebody get convicted of something that they did is because there's so many other cases that we can speak on where you have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that this person intended to do X, Y, and Z, right? And, you know, we know that being a police officer is a stressful job, and we know that, you know, you're, you know, as my brother would always says, it's game speed all the time, right? But y'all, we have to get away from making that excuse and making it okay for police to not be responsible for the way they react when they're dealing with citizens that are not trained to do what police are trained to do. So you're dealing with a citizen. This citizen may have a knife. This citizen may have a stick, a bat, whatever they may have. They are just regular citizens, right? You are trained with all that shit on your utility belt. You have to go through training to use your baton. You have to go through training to use your pepper spray. You have to go through training to use your taser or stun gun. You have to go through training to use your gun. Like, everything that you have at your disposal, you're trained to use it, and you're trained to use it situationally. And in every case where police show out, we're letting them off the hook. Like, hey, he didn't know how to react to this regular everyday citizen, and he thought his life was in danger, right? I've seen it plenty of times. Like, I've been in situations where I get pulled over, you know, by the police, and, you know, I have my hands on the steering wheel, and they might ask me to do something, and I'm like, I might just jerk because I'm, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm trying to go get my registration, but then I realize that I'm supposed to keep my hands on the steering wheel, and like, that quick movement for anybody could be the end of your fucking life. You know what I'm saying? So it's crazy that we've gotten to a point where motherfuckers got to stand up and applaud, and niggas threw parties and was dancing in the streets because somebody that was clearly guilty of murdering somebody else was found guilty.
Clearly.
You got to think about where we come from. Remember the Rodney King joint? Yeah. Nigga, Rodney King got his ass beat for what seemed like damn near half an hour on the side of a highway in the dark, middle of the night, and some random civilian with a camcorder. This was in the 90s, homie, with a camcorder recorded that shit. That was as cut and dry as it can get. And somehow those motherfuckers got off.
Well, remember, they took the trial to Simi Valley the first time. So they took it to racist Simi Valley.
And Rodney King, the Rodney King beating is the one that was caught on tape. Don't think motherfuckers wasn't out there getting their ass beat by the police before the Rodney King beating. That ain't the only one. That's what got that. That's what got caught on tape.
Well, I said it before. In the 70s, man, in the inner city, they were handcuffing black men and throwing them in the water and letting them drown in the pool, and just letting them drown. My dad had a couple friends that happened to, so it was multiple people.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And Ubang, the point that you made about the training, you know, your baton, your pepper spray, your taser, your gun. The thing is, they skip over all those motherfuckers and go straight to the gun. So all the training is out the door on all of the other shit. The shit that should, you know, basically subdue somebody who's not resisting arrest or, you know, wilding out and doing shit like that. I'm sure there's people out there who do, right? I'm not saying that it's not. You know, there's another side to it as well. Like you say, it's always game speed. You know, if you go back to our episode where we had Pancake on here, and speaking from the officer, the police officer's perspective, you know, you can get some insight from that. But it's still, you know, all of this stuff that's happening, it doesn't excuse the actions of these officers given what they're trained to do. You know, 0 to 100 real quick. That's basically what it is. Officers are going from zero to 100 real quick, like super fast. And it's like Ubang said, you could lean over and try to get your registration, and it's like, put your motherfucking hands up, you know, guns is out and all kind of shit. Like, and that's not, listen, the fact that I could sit up here and be like, I'm pretty sure all of us speaking right now, you know, the whole Two Peas in the Bond crew has had a gun pulled out on them by the police. That's a fucking shame.
Yeah.
DP. But the what I was telling you about and what is a shame of it all is that in that moment, right, a police officer pulls a gun out on you. You are supposed to be reserved. Because
without you having any training on how should I Ubang, our training is those conversations we had or that our parents had with us when the cop pull you over, keep your hands where they can see him and blah blah blah. We don't have any formal training like you. So yeah, I get exactly what you're saying.
You feel me? Like in those moments, how sad is that in this life that in those moments a gun is pointed at you by a police officer. And if you move the wrong way because you're scared, startled, surprised, nervous, you can die because he feels uncomfortable that you may be reaching for. I don't see a weapon, but the fact that you move, you may be reaching for a weapon. And now I'm justified in shooting you. And that's all it takes to get off the hook. Like what? It just doesn't. Nigga gotta make it make sense to me because I don't get it. I don't understand that. Like that shit is like so backwards. It's ass backwards.
So my question to both of you is what do you say if Chauvin gets off in 7 years? What do y'all say to that? How do you feel about the justice system?
I'd say I'm not surprised. Like nothing with the justice system when it comes to the police or anything like that. None of that. Nothing shocks me, or I'm not shocked anymore. What happened? Take the chick that was drunk. She was a police officer. She was drunk. She ran into the dude's crib. This is out in Texas.
I remember
ran that. Into the dude's crib because she thought it was her house or her apartment. It was his apartment. She goes in there. She kills the man. And when she's being sentenced, the judge is giving her a Bible and giving her a hug. And the victim's brother is asking for forgiveness to her. And I think she only got like seven. I think it was like 7 years.
Yeah, the bailiff was stroking her hair and making sure she was okay. I remember that case because that case, the woman, they made it seem like the woman just went into the wrong apartment. But, you know, those were like electrical locks. So you had to be like buzzed in or something. You couldn't use a regular key to get inside the apartment. So the whole story in itself was fishy. And just, again, it just shows you what kind of system that we live in, like the justice system, everything, and how the law is set up to protect white people, to protect police officers, to protect foreigners, but not to protect black folks. And when you look at it, black folks have built this country. We fought in every single documented war in U.S. history, more so than any other foreign group, any other group. And this is how we treat.
That just makes me think, Kevin, when you're talking about we fought in every single war, you got to think about, so we're in California, and, you know, don't folks out there, I'm not a historian, so don't, you know, be like, what the fuck is he talking about? You know, if I miss, you know, some key details, but you got to go back to the times of the southern part of the United States, the Mexico Cession, right? So you have the U.S. basically taking land from Mexico. California was part of that. Texas was part of that, right?
The War of 1812, right?
You know what? I don't remember the exact date, so that's why I put that out there. I think this is like the 1840s. Late 1840s, because you had the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, I think was 1848. Okay. So that was like basically around that time, the U.S. is taking more territory from Mexico, right? So you have these new territories popping up, and the fight for it was to expand slavery into those new territories, right? So you have black people fighting on your side, helping you just so they can be enslaved in the new territories that you're conquering. And it's crazy because the system, it's, you know, the system has always been built to oppress black folks. Even in the event that black folks are, like you said, building the nation, contributors for whatever the system may be, because if you fast forward, black folks have been contributors to the legal system. We've made contributions across the board to all the advancements in this country. Yet, when it comes down to the sets of rules and regulations that govern the country, we get the short end of the stick. You know what I'm saying? So my answer to your question, to kind of back up a little bit, as far as what would I think if he got 7 years, I'm on the side of Ubang, which is, I wouldn't be surprised, right? Shit wouldn't surprise me one bit. And it's because this type of shit is rooted in the way this country was built, the way this legal system was built. Like it ain't news. It ain't new news. You know what I'm saying? This is how things go around here. And it's a shame. I'm not saying that to say, you know, oh yeah, it's all good. Like, what do you expect, nigga? Just keep it pushing. Look, you know, turn the other cheek. No, you still have to fight and, you know, not accept the bullshit. It's just, you still wonder, like, damn, when will the real results come from this, right? And that kind of leads me to ask you guys, you know, you have people feeling like Kevin said a minute ago, you know, he's glad that the police officer got convicted, which is, if you're talking about a far cry from what happened with Rodney King, all of those motherfuckers got off. But in this case, Chauvin's convicted. You have the Raiders organization posting, I can breathe, whatever it was, I can breathe for 2021. And that was in reference to the case. That was in reference to the verdict. And I heard that George Floyd's brother, you know, express some gratitude to the Raiders organization, but the Raiders organization also got criticized for the tweet saying I can breathe. And it's like, I can understand the criticism because, yeah, motherfucker, we can breathe, but George Floyd can't, and he couldn't.
I think it was done in poor taste. And outside of that, you know, I think the owner, is his name Mark Davis?
Yeah, it's Mark Davis.
So he took responsibility for the tweet, right? And it's just, that is white privilege, right? He didn't understand. He was tone deaf. He didn't understand the impact of the statement and how it would come across if Mark Davis, a billionaire, starts trying to take an angle as though he has been oppressed and this, you know, this verdict has freed him. Like, damn, I can finally breathe. Nigga, what? You've been breathing your whole motherfucking life. Like, right. You've lived a good life. You've lived a charmed life. You get to walk around with the ugliest haircut known to man, right? And, you know, your pops left you a football team that you can mismanage, and it doesn't really matter because the money's still good, the check's still clear, and you want me to feel like this case affected you? It was just tone deaf. Like, bruh, even if you do feel that way, appreciation to you, but keep that to yourself. You know, write a letter to the family on the low. Donate some money to a fund or to a charitable organization that's fighting against police brutality, something like that. But don't come out with that crass, you know, tone deaf fucking tweet about you can breathe, because it just, and again, George Floyd's brother took the high road by just acknowledging it, saying thank you, and just keeping it moving. I'm not even gonna make it a bigger story, because had he said nothing, then they'd still be talking about it. But he just kept it moving, was like, thank you, appreciate it, let me get on about my shit, and just left it at that. And I like that. He just kind of diffused the whole thing. But all in all, right, niggas is like I said, it just goes to show all it takes is a little something to make niggas happy, right? Oh man, y'all got a verdict in y'all. Y'all got a verdict that went y'all way. Who knows how much time he's gonna get, how long he's gonna be locked up. And this shit was about as obvious as it gets. And you still have to be on pins and needles to figure out, was the verdict gonna go your way? The day of, and you got cities across America bracing. I work downtown Los Angeles. I work downtown, and I'm talking about, we were bracing for the worst. Like, you know, we had emergency teams on standby, like, hey, get your people, you know, we might have to send out an email, sending people home in case people start rioting and shit like that. Like, that is what comes out of a slam dunk case. That's crazy. Sad.
And you know what? I'm glad that you mentioned that, because for me, this kind of feels like, I shouldn't say kind of, this feels like the O.J. Simpson trial, in a sense that everybody was on pins and needles waiting to hear. And I remember we were at Crenshaw High.
Yes, sir.
We were at Crenshaw High watching it in Miss Roberts' class. The three, there was, we were all in there. We were there together.
Yeah, on a big back TV.
Yeah. TV with a booty on it. Yeah.
Hey, listen, the joint they used to have like one of those little carts, and they just roll the TV.
Yeah, they roll that motherfucker.
Yeah. With the VCR in the middle shelf.
Yeah, like, you knew it was time to watch a video on a Friday or something when they rolling that bitch in, like, hell yeah, nigga.
He was watching like Schindler's List, motherfucking Amistad. Now, I don't think Amistad was out yet, but like Schindler's List and of Mice and Men and all that, all types of bullshit.
Yeah,
on them big back TVs. But yeah, I thinking whoever it was it Miss Roberts?
It was Miss Roberts.
I think we might have been in Miss Little's class.
Miss Little. I was thinking Miss Little, because she was pissed.
She was pissed.
She was high.
Yeah.
Pissed.
It was Miss Little.
White teachers in our at our high school were outraged. And yeah, and niggas was going through the hallway screaming, "Don't squeeze the juice! Don't squeeze the juice!"
remember, Mr. Allen wrote on the board another lame Trojan and highlighted the OJ, the O and the J.
Oh yeah, yeah, like, man, he used to do some shit, man.
But you know, and again, we were young, and we were young, but we were old enough to understand the gravity of it. It was black versus, it was like a black versus white thing almost.
Yeah. And that's exactly what this is.
Yeah.
I don't think we were old enough to really grasp it. Like, damn, these teachers that they sent to this school to teach black kids, look at their reaction. Like, in the moment, I didn't even think about it. Like, at that young age, we were just happy that it went our way, and they were just mad that it didn't go their way. But hold on, y'all motherfuckers supposed to teach us how to be the best us that we could be? Mm-hmm. Man, fuck y'all.
Right.
Like, that's crazy to me. We had a bunch of white teachers, and it was all pissed off in a school full of black kids where we were hyped that OJ got off. Like,
teachers going in there snatching that hazard pay.
Yo, nobody put that shit together. Nobody put that shit together. Like, hold on, man. This is literally you can literally classify us as a school at war. Like, you got students that feel one way, teachers that feel another way. And we are supposed to learn from these teachers. These are supposed to be the teachers that are going to make us the next leaders of the free world. Like, how can I expect you to have my best interest at heart when we are clearly fighting two different wars?
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
I would say, too, it's mixed feelings behind a product of the program, because I feel like our teachers there were pretty good, you know, as far as the curriculum and shit went. Like, once I did go to college, it was some dumb motherfuckers around me who didn't know shit compared to the shit that I was prepared for at Crenshaw High School in the inner city, the high school that they always put in all the motherfucking movies. Crenshaw High, that's where we come from. You know what I'm saying? But that's a great point that Uban highlighted, because outside of the curriculum, you are living your own lives, your regular lives. And that's where the diversion comes. You got kids who, when they get out of school, they walking across the street and going into their house, or walking around the block and going home, or catching the bus 5 minutes, 10 minutes away. But these teachers are going to Simi Valley, like Kevin said a minute ago. They're commuting, coming into the city to teach kids. You know what I'm saying? So that's why, you know, Ubang is saying that. So, yeah, that's very true. Like, the shit is crazy. But then again, you know, just kind of going, bringing it, reeling it back into the trial. It was like the OJ case, right? It did have that vibe, that feel. And a minute ago, Ubon said it's cut and dry. Like, you look, the shit is on tape. It's like, what more do you need, right? That makes me think, because it's not over. You know, there were three other officers involved in this, and they are awaiting their fate, right? And I think they're charged with aiding and abetting second degree murder, aiding and abetting second degree manslaughter. I don't know the terms that come with those charges. So, you know, we'll have to see. But they will be coming up soon. And that's Alexander Kong, Thomas Lane, and To Tao. Those are the three officers. Hopefully I didn't butcher the names, but if I did, I don't give a shit. Fuck them. You know, it's not over, right? It's not over. But then the reason why I asked this thing about the Raiders posting the "I Can Breathe Now," right, is because, is there a false sense of relief? Even with black folks feeling like, yeah, man, you know, he was found guilty and da 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 da. Is there a false sense of relief, right? Is this really the start of accountability? Because now you see all of these people with there's always this new hashtag campaign, right? Now it's this "you're next" thing, right? Now let me speak on a few incidents that happened that were close in proximity as far as the date of the verdict, right? So on April 11th, you had Dante Wright killed in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. He was killed by a police officer named Kim Porter. This woman, during a traffic stop, she drew her weapon and yelled "taser." Drew her weapon, this is what she's saying, thinking it was her taser, and she shot the man. Shot and killed the man. Are we mistaken tasers for guns? Like, is that even an excuse? What the fuck?
Does a taser have a trigger? I know that sounds rhetorical, but does a taser have a trigger?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't know the difference between your gun and your taser at this point, it's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Why are you policing?
Are you qualified?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
A nigga can't make that.
She's been on the force for like 26 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. And then on 420, you know, you had Micaiah Bryant in Columbus, Ohio. She was shot by an officer, and his name was Nicholas Reardon, right? She was 15 years old, and she was killed as he pulled up. She had a knife in her hand. You know, they showed his body cam footage. With that situation, she had a knife. She's lunging at people, and he perceives her to be a threat. Again, though, It's hard to say, you know, was she going to stab somebody? Was she going to do this? Okay. Is the officer justified in shooting and killing her? The thing is, are you able to do something that can subdue the person and not kill them? Like, you're at target practice. I don't know how many days out of the week, how many hours you spend. You know where to shoot. You know what I'm saying? You could shoot somebody in the foot or something. You know what I'm saying? And basically stop them from running around and doing shit. Like, do you have to go for the kill if you're going to resort to pulling your gun?
Let me say this, man.
What the fuck?
That was a situation. And what was it? It was either North Carolina, South Carolina. Damn, I don't want to butcher it. Dylan Roof. Dylan Roof killed 9 people in a church after praying with him for 45 minutes.
South Carolina.
Thank you, Ubon. Shot, reloaded, shot again. The police got there. They took him alive in custody. And it didn't stop there. They allegedly took him to Burger King and got him something to eat. And then safely took him to the police station. He had already killed some people. She's lunging and had a gun. She's lunging at people with a knife. She hasn't killed anyone. She hasn't cut anyone.
Right.
Life.
My boy. And I argue. I got into a couple arguments with some people because they say, like, damn, you know what? Like, just watching the footage, you know, this one, you know, he justified it. It's justified as a police officer. And I'm like, it's really not. Let's back it up and give everybody knows about it at this point. She called the police. I don't know if you remember. I don't think you said
it. Yeah. I didn't say that, but yeah, you're right.
She was the one that called the police because she was getting jumped by some girls. The police officer gets there and he clearly doesn't assess the situation. Mike, he doesn't assess the situation to see what's going on. He just sees, again, white dude pulls up. It's a bunch of black people outside. Antennas is already up. I'm scared. I am afraid as an officer. Let that sink in. All right. I pull up on the scene. It's a niggas is out. Okay. Hold on. Where's my gun?
Mm-hmm.
He sees the girl lunging at someone. And this is where everybody's like, yo, he's justified because you can see right there. She had a knife and he had to save her. Okay. My man is like, he's like 2 basketball steps away from her. Right. This is a young girl.
You break out the taser, nigga.
Nigga. Just tackle her. Again, at the end of the day, if she swipes at somebody one time and you are able to step in, tackle her, whatever the case may be, I doubt the girl she swipes at loses her life. The girl that you have to tackle definitely doesn't lose her life. But instead, you shot her 4 times. You think she stopped? You think, okay, now the other girl's safe. I think she's safe now. Like, how the fuck?
And again. Ubon, you just said a minute ago, you got what? You got your baton. You got your taser. You got your pepper spray. You got all these things at your disposal, but you go straight to the gun. That's my thing. Like, and even if you go to the gun, my point was, okay, you skipped all of the other steps. You went all the way from 0 to 100 already. The scene, if you feel like, oh, it's crazy, she got a knife. Okay, so you're at the point where you feel you got to draw your gun. Listen, Ubon, you just mentioned how close he was to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about how close she was to the other girl. He shot with precision, did not hit anyone else,
yeah,
except for her. So you telling me they don't know or this dude didn't know how to shoot? What are you doing?
You are that close that you can shoot into a crowd of people and hit your target, which means that you can also probably shoot her in the limb, leg shot.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Or it also means that you were close enough that you could have just jumped in there with a baton or just with your hands and just moved her out the way to now. Okay. If you move her out the way, you pull something out, baton, weapon, anything. If you fire a shot, if you fire a round into the air.
Yeah.
You do a anything. If you fire a warning shot, the whole crowd, you're going to get the whole crowd's attention, young lady included. So that's what that, yeah, like, but that's the shit I'm talking about. Like, so one of my favorites, you know, and he's a polarizing figure, but I love him. Dr. Umar Johnson. He had a interview with the Breakfast Club, right? So he was talking to Charlamagne and DJ Envy, And he asked DJ Envy, because DJ Envy was one of the people that came to the dude's defense. Like, yo, he had to shoot her.
Yeah, I didn't know Envy said that.
Yeah. Yeah, Envy Cooney on the Breakfast Club. Like, man, I got to get these checks.
Now Envy's in Envy's. I'm not even defending him, but here's his thing. His dad, his dad is a retired police officer. So he has a family member that's part of the, you know, that's a police officer. And he was basically saying that, you know, like, you know, there are two times where you can use, or two different ways where you can use deadly force, where if you feel like your life is in danger, or if you feel like somebody else's life is in danger. So Dr. Umar, he runs up on him like, Envy, if that was you, if you were that police officer, would you have killed that girl? Would you have shot that girl? And Envy says, you know what? I probably wouldn't have. And he's like, why? Envy starts going, you know, talking about, oh, you know, because I know that's my community and I understand. So he's like, okay, because that girl's life mattered to you, right? So then he flips it on Envy and he says, Envy, do you think that if that little girl with the knife was white, do you think he would have killed her or shot her four times?
Hell no.
Envy get the squirming and shit. And
she would have had to stab Envy in his neck about four times before he was oh, fuck it.
No, no, no. He's not talking about Envy at this point. He's saying, if that little girl was white, do you think that officer, the white officer that killed the black girl, would have killed that the white girl?
Exactly. And what I'm saying is, for him to have shot the white, if a girl was white, for him to have decided he was going to shoot the white girl, the officer, that white girl would have had to turn on him with the knife. Yeah. And after her stabbing him about four times, then he's like, oh, well, shit, fuck it.
Yeah.
Ah, she got my clavicle. She's got to die.
Yeah, like, you know.
So it's just like, it's like, damn, yo, like that. But that's the difference. They come into a scene and they see a bunch of black faces and they already feel like, you know what? They don't care about themselves. They don't give a fuck about their communities. I don't give a fuck about them. I'm just here and I want to make sure that I make it home to my kids and my wife. And if I got to kill a motherfucker to get up out the ghetto without getting shot, without getting harmed, without getting hurt, that's what I'm going to do. And they look at suburban areas in America totally different. Like, you can really get down with a police officer if you want to in the suburban area and you're going to be all right. You're going to be just fine. And that's it's a stark difference between how the inner cities are policed and how the suburban areas are policed. It's sad.
No, it is, man. It is. And with everybody saying that, and not to just keep throwing stuff out there. So I'll throw out this last one, because it also seems like a, you know, mishandled or peculiar, to say the least, situation in Virginia, where Isaiah Brown, 32-year-old man in Virginia, was shot 10 times outside of his home. It's Spotsylvania County, and this happened on the 21st. So we had April 11th, April 20th, April 21st. So, you know, this is all within a couple weeks of each other. And in some of the instances, same day, a couple days of each other.
Yeah.
And this officer, you know, from the initial reports that I heard, this officer gave Isaiah Brown a ride home because his car was broken down somewhere. But then he was called back to the man's home, and his second time back to the home is when he shot him. Like, what? Like, the story just seems, it just seems weird. But yet again, it's another, you know, it's another black man being shot by an officer. And I'm gonna stop with throwing out the incidents, right? You know, it's a sad situation. We can sit here and talk about it, but these folks have lost their lives and these families are grieving and these friends are grieving. So please, folks out there, don't take this as us being insensitive. We're just trying to, you know, shed light on the ridiculousness that's happening. And, you know, prayers out to all of the folks who have lost loved ones in tragic incidents like this.
And not to quote Dr. Umar again, but I'm gonna quote Dr. Umar again. Until laws get changed, like, there's no justice, right? You're not gonna see any change come about. You just have a small moment of euphoria. Motherfuckers is happy that, you know, justice was served in a very obvious case. And then tomorrow it's back to, you can have video camera footage. And if we have even any reason to suspect anything, you're dead. The kid that got shot in who was the kid that was in the car with his girlfriend?
Was that in Minnesota? You talking about the one in Minnesota in St. Paul a couple years ago?
No. This happened like a month ago. The kid that was
Dante Wright.
Yeah. Okay. So that was Dante Wright.
That was Brooklyn Center. Where Kevin, you were.
He had got pulled over for, I think, registration or something like that.
Yeah, it was expired tags or expired
tags on his vehicle. Yeah. And then when they pulled him over, they realized he had a warrant for like a misdemeanor.
Yeah, that was the taser incident, Uban. That was the pulling the taser versus the gun.
But what I'm saying is, like, all that for a misdemeanor. Right. Like, really? They approach these situations with these dudes like these dudes are like Jeffrey Dahmer or Ted Bundy. Like, you ever seen the movie Con Air, where they had, John Buscemi or whatever his name is, and he's like the scrawniest dude, but he's on like level 5. Like, they got his mouth locked up, and they got his arms shackled down, and you got all these big burly ass you got all these big burly convicts that's on the plane like running crazy, but they got old boy strapped in, you know what I mean, like the skinniest, scrawniest dude on the plane strapped in. And it's just like, yo, like that's how they treating these kids. That's how they treating these black people. They treating them like these are like the biggest, baddest criminals. They done, they done authorized 100 murders. They done, kingpin status. And it's shoot on sight. Like, if you see them, take them alive. But if you have to kill them, just kill them. And a lot of these niggas is jaywalking, hanging out at the train station because they homeless, misdemeanors. Parking tickets, like, you could lose your life over some bullshit out here. And when they say that it's the most dangerous motherfucker to be is a black person in America, or the most in danger, right? It's like, if you live in the inner city, when you leave your house, and I've said this before, you have to worry about the police, then you got to worry about other black people, because self-hate has been taught. So if you come out your house, you wearing a certain color or you look a certain way, you could be my enemy. I'm black, you black, right? So you can lose your life to your own people. You can lose your life to the people that's supposed to be protecting you. And then you can lose your life to the other side, racist, white supremacist, or just, anything. Like, you have no recourse. There's no safe space for you as a black man, in America. Like, nigga, even your own people will take you out. Ask Malcolm X. You feel me? It's crazy, man. And you still got to find a way to navigate that shit. Keep your sanity. Try and enjoy life and all that. But it's, it's every day motherfuckers get up and, you get to moving around. You get to just enjoying yourself. You can't take that shit for granted. Because I really believe that George Floyd, when he left the house that morning, he thought he was coming back to the crib. Like, I got a family. I got a daughter. I'm not expecting to have a interaction with the police officer be the end of my life. And this motherfucker is sitting on my neck with his hands in his pocket with people, just pedestrians with just a half a heart. Nigga, it's not like you gotta be, Mother Teresa. Like, a nigga with a half a heart is walking by like, bruh, you're killing him. You're killing a dude. What the fuck are you doing? Get off of him. And you got your partners, three other motherfucking officers, standing around watching. And when the police report went in, none of the shit as it actually played out even made it into the police report. So what does that tell you about the police? They've been doing this shit forever. I think it was a teenage girl. If that girl didn't record that shit, the way it got written into the police report was a totally different situation. And nobody would have had the courage. The EMT complained, pedestrians complained, but who would have had the courage, or who would have had the credibility to outrank what this police officer had put in his report? You get what I'm saying? If the video's not there, there's no case. You can go and complain to the police station. You can go and complain to the mayor. You can go and complain to the city. They'll file that shit into some miscellaneous file where nobody's ever going to look at it. It's going to get filed away somewhere, but nobody would have done shit.
The other thing about this case, man, that's interesting, is that with the case of George Floyd, George Floyd made it into the NBA bubble, right? It was a post-game interview where Paul George had this whack-ass interview where he was talking about he was in a bad place, in a bad space mentally. And because I still remember it. And they asked Doc Rivers about Paul George, and Doc Rivers ignored what they were asking about Paul George and went straight into George Floyd and started crying in a post-game interview. And then from that moment, the NBA started to get involved with the George Floyd murder. And Steven Jackson went into Minneapolis. I don't know if y'all remember. Flew to Minneapolis because he called George Floyd his little brother. They actually had a relationship. And, you know, I remember him holding George Floyd's daughter on his shoulders, and he's walking around with her all through Minneapolis. But I looked at how the NBA got behind it and how players got behind it. So in looking at the verdict, it seemed like it had to go that way because the NBA got behind it.
Okay. So
and let me say this. There were some other things the NBA got behind. And everything that the NBA got behind at that point, it was pushed and it went through.
Okay. So here's a good time to plug this in then. So the situation with LeBron James speaking up on or voicing his opinion, right? So I think he put up one of those "your next" tweets for the guy Nicholas Reardon when he shot Mekhi Bryant in Columbus, Ohio. You know, that's basically home for LeBron, right? So there's this pub out there, Lenny's Pub, I think. It's near that area, Delhi Township or something like that. Hopefully I'm not butchering the name of the pub and where it's located or whatever, but you have this pub saying, the owner of this pub is saying that he will not play NBA games at the bar until LeBron James has been expelled from the league, right? So basically his stance, and I'm sure this is the stance that a lot of people have, because you go back to old girl who was talking about the shut up and dribble situation. You have this guy who's saying that these athletes are using their platform in an abusive manner. Basically saying that when they're going out and speaking on these situations and voicing their, you know, opinions and their emotions are spilling over, and they're basically speaking on Black folks who are getting killed, an issue that's hitting close to home for them. You have white folks who are not experiencing the same thing, who are stepping in saying, hey, you know, you play basketball, you have a responsibility to just shut up and dribble. I don't want to hear your opinion about this guy who just, you know, shot a girl, or this lady who thought she pulled out a taser and shot a man, or a guy who kneeled on a man's neck and killed him. Like, I don't care what your opinion is about that. Just dribble the ball, entertain us. This is the minstrel show. Like, you know, show me, make me laugh. I'm your king. You're not King James. I'm the king. Make me laugh. You know, do something to entertain me. Like, that's kind of the vibe I get from these people who were speaking on stuff like that. Now, granted, LeBron James pulled down his tweet when he told the guy that he was next. He's, you know, did say some things like basically he's just tired of this shit happening, which a lot of Black folks are tired of this type of shit happening, right?
And I salute LeBron James, because there was the situation with Tamir Rice, where this is a 12-year-old child that was murdered for having, and he had a toy gun, and he was murdered within 30 seconds of the cop arriving on the scene. And when this was mentioned years ago, the Tamir Rice shooting, LeBron James played with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he was like, I don't know anything about it. And he pretended to not know anything about it, and he didn't say anything about it. He stayed away from it. And when that happened, honestly, I lost a little respect for LeBron when that happened. Because at that point, I believe Bronny was about the same age. And so he acted as if he didn't know what was going on. I'm not sure if it happened in Cleveland or if it happened in Akron, but it was right where LeBron was. So for LeBron now to at least send a tweet saying you're next in reference to another black person that was shot by the police in Ohio, I commend you, LeBron. Thank you. Thank you for saying something. Thank you for speaking up. I appreciate that.
And I'm not going to beat a dead horse. So, but what people don't understand is that Brett Favre jumped out as he typically do and, you know, fanned the flames, saying something to the effect of he doesn't believe Derek Chauvin intended to kill George Floyd. But he was also, I think previously he had said, something to the effect of he likes to see his sports not really intertwined with his politics, right? So, you know, he likes to when he sees athletes, he likes to just see athletes for being athletes and just, you know, being able to separate what he's seeing on the basketball court, what he's seeing on the football field, and what he's hearing, you know, in the news and you know, all the politics. And then he comes out, former NFL athlete, comes out and starts talking policy, starts talking this, you fall into that category as of the athlete. Nigga, go that way then. Why do I want to know what your take is on Derek Chauvin and what he did and if he intended to kill George Floyd? But you know, as Shannon Sharp said, Brett Favre know where he from. He from Mississippi. You from the dirty South, where is a lot of segregation and you seen black people get treated a certain way. You came up under that. That shit ain't lost on you. Can you imagine if Brett Favre spoke the way he speaks now when he was playing in the NFL? Y'all saw what they did to Drew Brees, right? they tried to publicly flog his ass. What you think they would have done to Brett Favre? But it's, you know, a lot of these motherfuckers, Brett Favre, Mike Ditka, Brian Urlacher, the good old boys club, they get to talking real loud after they out the game. Like when y'all was on that field and these black dudes could knock you upside your head, they was real reserved, but now that they got a little extra time on their hands, see, and I told you I wasn't even going to get on this shit. I wasn't even going to get on that. So I'm going to let him live.
They would have hemmed that nigga Brett Favre and his Wranglers up, nigga.
I was about to say, you know, the nigga's racist. That nigga wears Wranglers, you know?
So if you feel like LeBron James has a responsibility to deliver the message after receiving all the facts and, you know, understanding everything that transpired in the situation, if that's your angle, voice it. I hear you. If y'all know who Royce da 5'9" is, right? He's a hip hop artist. He's a rapper. He's an MC, dope MC. He's a lyricist out of Detroit. And he put up just a quick little video on IG, and he was talking about folks using their platforms and athletes using their platforms. But then he was talking about white folks using their platforms to criticize black folks for using their platforms. And then he was also talking about, I guess if you want to call them prominent, I forget the exact term he used, but prominent black folks using their platforms to criticize other prominent black folks for using their platforms. Right. So I was following exactly what the fuck he was saying. And it's a shame that somebody like LeBron James or whoever, any black person who has a platform to speak on an issue that deserves to be spoken on, that needs to be spoken on, is criticized for doing so and criticized by white folks who really don't care about the problem because it doesn't affect them in their community. But then also criticized by black folks who should have the backs of other black folks when it comes to an issue that's affecting the black community. So there's this division in the black community, and you're being attacked by white folks who don't give a shit, and then black folks who were just, in my opinion, lost because they're criticizing people who are speaking up for justice. But at the end of the day, all these people with the platforms and the criticisms and all those other things, don't let issue be lost, right? Don't let the real issues fall to the wayside, which is people are being killed. Black people are being killed in situations where they don't have to be killed. Young children are being killed in situations where they don't have to be killed. There is an issue with training. There is an issue between black people and the police officers in every single community across the nation. I don't give a shit where you are. If it's white folks policing the community and it's black folks mainly in the community, guess what? There's problems. And officers, period, because I done had black officers pull guns out on me and, you know, Hispanic officers pull guns out on me. So it's the police force and black people, because to me, it seems like that's who you're taught to target. That's who you're taught to fear. So automatically, when you're hopping out of your car with your baton and your taser and your pepper spray and your gun, you're skipping all the first three and going straight to the gun, because you see who you've been taught to target, black people. So don't lose sight of the issue. While you criticizing LeBron James and all this other shit, the facts still remain, the issue still remain. Like, the shit needs to stop. What's up, folks? We appreciate y'all tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on IG, Facebook, and Twitter at Two Peas in a Bong. That is the number 2, WOPEEZANDABONG, Two Peas in a Bong. You can catch our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor, and more. And we're now on the One United Radio Network. You can find that at oneunitedradio.com. Again, we appreciate y'all rocking with us. We'll catch you on the next one.